The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a, it is a warm Friday. I am, I'm beat. I'm ready for the weekend right now. 6 hours of yard work, and I'm about toast. So I'm going to turn it over to Dan.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You got to pace yourself for the two-hour radio show, of course.
You can't pace yourself when you're working in the yard. You just try to get done, man. It's a hot one today. And look,
I'm glad you're here.
Where's that rain we were going
to
get?
Ready to host and carry the two-hour show, as always. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, I was coming in, and you know, we introduced Graham the other day. It was about to be a reminder. I was going to let Graham sort of get the feeling for my first day. When over in Montgomery, we decided to go year round. We were doing a show back in Montgomery, Graham.
Does Graham not know that the producer does the second hour on Friday by himself?
Or he does Friday by himself.
Did I tell you that? Oh yeah, sorry.
We didn't tell you. That's why everybody else left. That's why Jacob and Carter booked out of here in a hurry.
Until football season, we don't work on Fridays usually, Graham. So yeah, make sure that they. I guess we're doing it this Friday because you're new. But that's something we want to
just be ready. Just be ready. That's not you. No, I like the sound of that.
No, we've
never done that. But no, seriously.
Bill, we work 5 days a week, unlike the podcast.
They're working. It's not our fault. I've heard that one many times, but it's true this time. But no, here's the deal, Graham. All right, so I was doing a show with the legendary former voice of Auburn's athletics, of Auburn football and basketball, Jim Fife, the great Jim Fife. He and I did a show over in Montgomery back. We started it in the mid-'80s, and it just ran during football season because the thought was people don't care about talking sports except during football season. And then it extended into basketball because football recruiting.
Do you remember the day? Do you remember the day of this first show? I think it's a pretty significant day in Alabama radio history. Lay it on me.
This is really sad. I believe it was April 1st, which is appropriate. It was April Fool's on me. I believe it was 88. I believe.
Picture Scott at that point. How big was Scott? Right.
Scott was not 3 years old. Okay. Yeah, that one's right.
That timing checks out, yeah.
Because the second year we were doing it, we'd gone to 2 hours, and it was Jim and me, and I was going to get to Scott's first T-ball game. And, you know, that's another story. Oh, man, yeah. I was going to get to Scott's first ever T-ball game. He was not quite 4 years old.
Okay,
Steve Cosgrove, who you know was
the
coach.
Love Steve Cosgrove. Steve Cosgrove.
Going to get to his first ever T-ball game, my firstborn's first ball game.
About 12 weeks away from hanging out with Steve Cosgrove for a couple of Saturdays, right? Where, you know, we're coming up on getting to see the Cos. Graham, Jim in this story is former Auburn play-by-play guy Jim Fife, who this summer marks the 20th anniversary of his passing.
Sadly, we just passed that a little while back.
Yeah, but 20 years ago this summer was when he June. But
great guy, great announcer, great broadcaster. But so he and I were doing a show that went 2 hours a day, but it was just during football and it had been stretched till the end of March, basically. But the thought was, there's not enough interest to do this. And we really thought, oh, this thing that there's enough interest, and you can find enough to talk about during the entire summer with other sports as well as football news and getting ready for the football season and things like that. So sort of as a last-minute thing on the last Friday in March, the station general manager said, okay, we're going to give it a try. And it's like, oh, that's cool. But we're going to change the time. Instead of being 4 to 6, we're going to do an hour at 6 o'clock. Okay, and I thought, well, that's fine. Jim and I will be able to handle that because, I mean, Jim was great. He could fill time as well as anybody.
So what was on the air from 4 to 6 at this point? This would have been music or political talk?
No,
local?
This was like national. I think we were running ESPN.
Okay, all right.
So it was something like, well, we were going to...
We normally started
running that.
So the notion of sports talk wouldn't have been foreign to people, but a local show would have been... More, I don't know what ESPN would have been running back in those days.
No, it wasn't ESPN. No, you're right. Like it was music.
I think you had to be breaking into music.
No, you're right. It was music. It was pre-programmed music. You're absolutely right.
FM radio.
Because it was WBAM at the time. It was not MSP like it is now. It was WBAM. So yeah, we're going to get into, because the thing is, there wasn't a whole lot of advertising sold for the music.
Playing some Fleetwood Mac.
It was oldies. I mean, it was
okay.
It was
and oldies in '82 would have been like pre Beatles pop music, right?
This was, I'm talking
Perry Como.
Man, this was classics. This was like '50s and
Frankie Valli.
It was. I don't know. It wasn't great. I wanted them to go back and replay their old. WBAM, this AM station, was a 50,000-watt daytime station. It was a blaster. And in the 60s and 70s, it was a huge top 40 station. And they had their own charts. I always thought they should just go back and replay music from their own charts. You know, replay their hits.
You've had this idea before for radio.
Yes, and sadly, I've never had enough influence or whatever to be able to do that.
And I'm not sure. I do like the idea of redoing like the what was it, the satellite radio that does like, all right, here was the top 40
right
this week.
'70s and '80s do that.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, I thought that anyway they didn't. But so we're going to start on Monday at 6 o'clock. Well, Monday during the day. And this is sort of a precursor.
What
to
about
the,
maybe an hour a day where the radio station says this is exactly what we played?
I think that's cool.
Exactly.
I think that'd be
what
cool if
played.
A station had been around and has that kind of history.
Yeah,
I think that would be great.
This is exactly what
that.
We played 20
like,
years
hey,
ago
we're,
or 40
we're,
years
we're,
ago.
We're reliving the past. It's
you're right. It's, I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah,
you're right. All right.
All right. Anyway, they didn't do
sold
that.
Me on it.
So Monday during the day, Jim says to me, "Oh, I had something come up. I've got to be gone. So you just got it yourself." And I'm like, okay, I've got it myself. It's just an hour. I'd done the show by myself at times. Usually had guests, but we always got calls. Well, of course, it was at a different time, and I went and checked to see if there had been any promos run or anything, and there hadn't. So I thought, well, you know, maybe folks will be listening. But that's all right. It's still an hour. So I go into the control room, and I look down at the log. Now, back in the day, there was a printed log of the commercial breaks, what you're looking at there on the screen. And there was nothing. I mean, it showed 6 o'clock, and then it showed 7 o'clock. Not a commercial. Mm-hmm. There was not a promo. There was nothing in there. So I had to talk. I was supposed to talk for a solid hour with no guests or anything. And I thought maybe the phone never rang. I started off, and I'm hitting the highlights of what everything's going on in sports today, previewing some other things, and I thought, man, that was good. I need to take a break. I look at the clock, and it's like 7 after.
How long between the decision to green light the show by management and you guys being on the air?
A weekend.
Okay, so on Friday they decided
Friday
we're doing
afternoon,
the show.
They said we're going to do the show.
This wasn't
Monday morning, they said the show's not going to be at 4, it's going to be at 6.
So this wasn't something you had plugged for weeks and weeks on the air and
there was no chance to do anything.
I don't want to make it sound like what we do is just so grueling and so difficult compared to other jobs.
When you don't have anyone to talk to,
I would challenge folks.
That is tough to do.
I think, you know what? I would say filling 3 minutes without a break about a subject might be a little bit more difficult than people realize. If you just have to go
maybe
on the moment.
Maybe if you took public speaking, could do 3 to 5.
At the drop of a hat. That was an event back in the public speaking days in high school.
Oh, yes.
They would give you, I think it was impromptu was the event where they would give you a quote and you would have 2 minutes to prepare and then you would get up and you would give a 5-minute speech about that quote. And I always found that to be like a really interesting event, depending on what kind of quote you got, because you'd see, you know, good, you know, but sometimes it was, I mean, sometimes you'd be ready to fall just absolutely flat on your face. And it's you can tell it's going to be a grab bag Friday. And I'll tell you what, Bill, I did the mailbag for Ferguson while he's out of the country.
Uh-huh.
I got a couple interesting questions
in the
Observer mailbag that I want to pose to you. And I'm glad Graham's here. Graham, you follow Penn State a little bit, right? We had some Penn State discussion on yesterday's show.
Right. We were talking about the fact that Penn State is the only Big Ten team that doesn't have a permanent opponent set up in their schedule. What do they call it again?
The Flex Plus Pro, right? Is it something like that?
No, it's something plus. It's
Protect.
Flex Protect Plus.
Yeah, something like that.
That's what it is. I mean,
it sounds like a ceiling.
Again, it does.
But the
We could do a couple of minutes on that.
Well, no, I want to know for sure with Graham, is there a game that you feel like needs to be on the Penn State schedule every year? Like, is there one? Because we were talking about how, you know, it never crossed our minds in making up SEC schedules. That's not to say it's a bad idea. It's just we didn't think of, you know, just look at all the games in the conference you feel like need to be played every year, even if it's an uneven number with every team, and just have a schedule that has those, and then you fill out the rest however you can.
We were trying to get to a way to play everybody as often as possible and looked at a 3-6 for a 9-game schedule, 3 permanents and 6 rotating of the other 12 teams, or 1-7 with an 8-game schedule. You know, you need something, and the Big Ten does too. They need either an 8 or a 9 game schedule to be able to rotate everybody on a 2 to 4 year basis.
So what do you think of Penn State's draw in this whole thing? Because Penn State doesn't have a team they're playing every year, and they're the only team in the Big Ten,
right?
I think that was left off that list.
Do you feel like there's another team in the Big Ten that Penn State should play every year?
Well, I think they lucked out a little bit because if you look geographically, the only ones over there, you got like Maryland and Rutgers, which I think they kind of would run over those
guys. And they're playing
each other.
They paired them.
The only one I could see, and I think it's more of a relevance in this, like recently versus long-term, would be Ohio State. And I'm a little biased. I'm an Ohio State fan, you know, but I like that game. I think it's a good game. It brings good numbers, good views, and it's also a competitive game.
And Ohio State only has one permanent opponent, and that's Michigan. Michigan has 3.
I thought there was maybe
Is it 3? I know 2. I know Michigan State was 1.
Michigan, I believe.
I was looking at it actually right before you guys walked
in. Did they draw
out
Iowa too? Is it Michigan? Michigan.
I was thinking Michigan was one of the ones that had 3. They've got at least 2. I know they've got Ohio State and Michigan State.
Yeah, and I thought for some reason they drew a third one.
I'll pull it up. I just had it pulled up earlier. The guys were talking about on the line.
I thought maybe Michigan State for Penn State too, because I know that's a game that's had some history in the last couple of decades as a I think the suggestion there is that Michigan State and Penn State are no one's chief rival, right? Because even Michigan, the Ohio State game is a little bit bigger than the Michigan State game.
But you have to keep that in state.
Michigan State game. But I mean, you don't like, you know, if someone is your arch rival, you don't want to be their secondary rival, right? And I think
that's the way it is with some teams.
No, but I think for Michigan State and Penn State, the thinking was like maybe this game can be the primary rivalry for both programs. And had they decided to give Penn State Michigan State every year, I think that's probably, you know, maybe the rivalry would have grown in perception that way. But Penn State did not, according to that article. Penn State did not submit any team as a team they felt like they needed to play every year in the Big Ten, which, I mean, I guess
what's,
is a commentary on their rivalries.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because the story said that without having a permanent rival, they will be able to play certain teams 3 out of 4 years. But
and they're going to open with a home-and-home against USC, which I think is also part of trying to bring some power team. And they're playing Ohio State in 24. They're not going to play them every year. I believe the schedule reset starts with Ohio State at Penn State.
Well, the schedule reset starts in 20 after 25. So they said they're going to go 2 years. Yeah. But I'm still trying to figure how you do a 3 out of 4 and you're rotating other teams in there. That's what's going to be really interesting, because if you're playing everyone, either all four, playing one or three, well, in a 9-game schedule, you'd have to be playing up to 3 teams 4 times in 4 years. I guess you'd do 2 different teams 3 times in 4 years is the way you'd have to do it. So for Penn State, they could have Ohio State and Michigan 3 out of 4 years, and the other time is when somebody else is playing them. But, yeah, it's really interesting. We're just getting underway. Hour number one of The Drive is brought to you, as usual, by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline, where you can get through to us by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. On the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. You can go to your favorite podcasting platform. You can also go to ESPNAU.com or RadioAlabama.net and get the podcast that way. We're working on fixing the Apple and Spotify links. Station management is on it. I was gently kidding earlier, the podcast can be available on, you can have it at ESPNAU.com and on Google, and we're working on getting the Apple and Spotify links fixed.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in as we get underway here on the Friday Drive.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon, 22 minutes after 4 o'clock, Bill and Dan. Yeah, let's, before we get to Terry, some news of the day. Auburn picking up a commitment from the junior college forward we were talking about a couple of days ago with Jason Caldwell. It's either Adoran. That's what I heard today.
Adoran, okay.
Adoran Scott, 6'9", a little over 200 pounds from Navarro Junior College out in Texas. I think he's a native of Texas as well. We'd said that, you know, the one thing that Bruce Pearl could be looking for would be some help on the inside, in the front court, some help defensively as a rim protector and a rebounder. And that appears to be what Mr. Scott is.
Yeah, third guy coming in with college basketball experience, but they didn't play necessarily at a high level or on a big stage last season, right? This is Auburn's second incoming junior college player, along with Chad Baker Mazzara, although Chad Baker Mazzara has Division I experience from his time at San Diego State and Duquesne. You've also got Chaney Johnson coming in. I blanked on this earlier in the week. What level is Huntsville? Are they a D? Are they D1AA or are they D2? Where Chaney Johnson is coming from? They were
moving to D1. Yeah, so they're probably.
I think,
you know, 1AA or whatever that's called.
I think they're 1AA. I don't think it's a D2 program.
No,
they're all coming in with a chance to. It's hard to project players like that because, you know, you don't know the exchange rate of SEC basketball to the level they were playing at last season. But no, this is a nice. I mean, why were we talking about Bruce adding to the front court in the first place? Right. This is that's one spot where it would make sense for Auburn to look to get younger and maybe develop a guy with the expectation that Janai and Jalen could be in their final year at the program.
And here's something I had not seen. So I clicked on UAH basketball just to get some info. And you know what's on the front page of UAH basketball? Chaney Johnson named Alabama Sports Writers Association Small College Athlete of the Year.
Hey.
How about that? Congratulations to the incoming Auburn former UAH star. He's the first UAH athlete to ever be named the Sports Writers Small College Athlete of the Year since Nicole Fedorovich from women's lacrosse.
I believe it is Division II, by the way. I believe they were, they made it to the Division II South Region finals. So it isn't, it's not 1AA.
Yeah, they played, you know, obviously.
It's Gulf South Conference in Division II.
Mm-hmm. Which is what Troy used to be in before they moved up. And UAH, I believe, is moving up as well at some point basketball-wise.
And Bruce has in the AL.com story about Chaney Johnson getting the award. Bruce has a quote there. At the end, quote, the perfect example of the great American dream. He will have the opportunity to impact our team right away, which may have been a quote from the signing. I don't know if that's exactly with regards to Chaney Johnson winning that award. But Bruce got to see this guy in person when he was at UAH when Auburn played him.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
I think you got to. Were you at that game?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean you get to see a little bit of it too. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who. Could come in and
he's athletic. He can shoot it.
Yeah, and can play a couple of different
and he's
positions.
Good, pretty good rebounder.
Big enough to play power forward in a small on a small team, but could also supplement the team at the three or even the two.
All right, let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Terry's been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Terry.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill and Dan. How y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Great. Bill, take you down memory lane. I appreciate you pointing that. When I was a senior at Pinson Valley High School, just up the road, there was a little small town called Onion, Alabama.
Yeah.
Up Highway 79. And I remember you and Jim's show being syndicated on a station called WKLD in Onion.
Absolutely. That was our first syndication before it came over here into Auburn, as a matter of fact. We appreciated that because it got us into Birmingham a little bit.
Right, and I remember that because I think I called him to your show several times.
I do remember that. Absolutely, that's the first time we spoke.
Yeah, right. That was. I don't even know if that station's still around. I don't know much about that area anymore. Where my sister lives in Onion, but I don't know that much about that area anymore.
Yeah,
honestly,
a couple of former Auburn football players that were owners and managers of the station. So that was a great opportunity.
And it was a small station, wasn't it, Bill?
Yeah.
I think they changed their format several times and danced around, but they carried you and Jim's show, and that's how I come across you guys. And you could barely pick it up in Pinson. Because it's probably, I don't know the wattage of it or anything like that. I don't know all that stuff, but Pinson was about 25 miles up the road or so.
Yeah, that was back before there was any streaming or the ability to pick anything up on the World Wide Web, as we called it back then.
Right. I thought I'd bring that up. I just wanted to point that out.
That's
have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks, Terry. Yeah, WKLD. I'd forgotten. Danny and Tommy were the guys that sort of helped get us on up there.
So I never met Jim Fife. I was able to listen to him during when I was following Auburn in high school. But that was the summer. The summer I moved to Auburn was the summer where he passed away at sort of the beginning
03.
Of that summer back in 03. Yeah. And it was a big change because I remember I was in the booth for. I was in the booth for Bramblett's first game as a true freshman. So he was. I've heard a lot. You work in radio in Auburn, right? You hear stories about Jim Fife from a lot of different people.
Oh, he was a character. Too.
Yeah, he was a character, and a lot of places in college athletics. You feel like you're really lucky if you get someone who becomes, the voice of the program or something.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn's had a couple, and I feel like they've, the memories of all of them are, really warm and really fond, and it's Jim Fife certainly somebody who left a huge impression.
334-321-1390. We're coming up on our bottom of the hour break. We'd love for you to join in, and we started yesterday, so we sat here with Carter and came up with the. Must-have games, we felt, for every team. Now, yeah, we probably, if we'd been doing the Big Ten, we probably would have put, I don't know if we'd put Penn State, Michigan State in there. I feel more strongly about the games that we came up with for SEC teams yesterday than I probably would about Penn State, Michigan State.
And I forget, did we give everyone?
Everyone had at least one.
Yeah, because South Carolina was the one that we were sort of flimsy about. Are we going to put?
We gave South Carolina. Who did we give South Carolina? We gave Kentucky Vandy.
Yeah, it was something.
I think it's the only Kentucky one.
You got Carter Cup notes there.
That's the only Kentucky one we had. I don't know if we gave South Carolina anybody. Did we?
I think Kentucky. I think we decided that South Carolina. Oh, because of Stoops and Beamer, right?
Oh,
we decided
okay.
We did want everyone to get one.
But I mean, that one I don't feel like is an absolute have to.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's probably better for everyone in the league.
We
to
just
get
didn't
one,
want anybody to be left out.
Yeah, and Kentucky, South Carolina has become, and you don't feel like you're really dealing either of them like a fatal blow.
No,
right?
No, that's true.
It's not Georgia, and you're not cutting anybody a break by giving them Vandy. So I'm fine with the Georgia with South Carolina Kentucky rivalry game sort of continuing right now if you designate it that way. But no, we came up with a list I feel pretty good about, and I know one of the reasons we were saying. With Bama, I absolutely think if you do it that way, it's Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee. Which, I mean, that's a stiff drink, right? I mean,
a stiff drink, but I mean, as you know, when I went back and looked over the last 5 years, I mean, Tennessee, yes, last year they made a big step forward, but Auburn hasn't been anything overwhelming over the last 4 or 5 years either. LSU is the best of those three over the last 5 years, and Alabama's the best team in the conference, so they ought to be able to handle that. And don't tell me or go find an Alabama fan that would tell you none of those three is a rivalry.
Oh no, I think it's absolutely the right three. So we can break that down. I filled in Justin Ferguson's on vacation. He wasn't on the show this week, and I filled in for him on his podcast and on his weekly Observer mailbag. A segment that you can get if you're a subscriber to the Auburn Observer newsletter. And I have a couple of questions that folks sent in, Auburn-centric. A couple of them aren't necessarily Auburn-centric, but with the
No, let's hit them.
Yeah,
that's
fine. I'll tell you what, when we come back from the bottom of the hour break, I have a couple of them because I definitely want Bill's thoughts on two or three of the Auburn ones because I think you'd have a unique perspective. And I want to get Graham's thoughts on a couple of these as well, so we'll do a little Auburn Observer mailbag on the drive later on.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
Let's get back to the drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon with Bill and Dan. Got Graham back at the controls again today, so come on in and join us. But all right, so Dan, was this something that had to do with the mailbag that you've been showing us these logos here?
Yeah, that was one of the questions that I was. Let me see here. So one of them's really wordy. It's a good question, though. You know, so I filled in for Justin Ferguson on his weekly sort of Observer mailbag, where readers and listeners to the podcast email in questions for Justin or a celebrity guest. To answer. All the celebrity guests were unavailable, so they went with me. Somebody was asking. Let me see if I could find. How about this, Bill? Long question about recruiting and Hugh Freeze. I'll boil it down to just the final to the final two questions, really, of it. What does Auburn need to do on the field over the next 3 years to help turn? Improve Hugh Freeze's fortunes in recruiting high school rankings, you know, recruiting high school players. And, you know, what does proof of concept look like in a recruit's mind at each stage of the project, which is a more vague thing to answer. But what do the results need to look like on the field in your mind early on to help
in
Hugh
three
Freeze?
Years?
I would say early. I would say you don't even have to be.
Within 2 or 3 years, I think contending for the conference title game. I mean, doesn't mean necessarily you have to make it. I think you need to see this year, you need to see that Auburn is competitive in every game. I mean, that doesn't mean that they keep every ball game within a touchdown, but you know what I mean. You can see how competitive they are and that they're doing things to keep themselves competitive in the game. First of all, I don't think Auburn's going to struggle recruiting high schoolers now. I think they're getting more interest because Hugh Freeze knows how to recruit. He recruited at Ole Miss. And yeah, I know some people will roll their eyes, but I mean, no, he is a recruiter. He loves doing it. I think high school coaches are very impressed with Hugh and his staff. But yeah, I mean, you need to see some improvement that the team's getting better. I think you're going to see a better product on the field. I think you're going to see that it's better coached. And that's what's going to help turn some of the other players that are like maybe passing on Auburn right now because they feel like they want to immediately be playing for a championship contender.
Yeah, there are high school players probably in wait-and-see mode about Hugh Freeze at Auburn. I think Hugh Freeze has probably sped up the rebuild, sped up the timeline with the players he was able to get. I wonder if people are nervous because Hugh Freeze hit the portal so hard in his first few months on the job that they think
What would they have preferred?
No, but
sit back with what you had.
No, but
and try to sign some high schoolers next year.
But what would you say to somebody wondering if that's going to be the plan moving forward? Is to rely heavily on the portal rather than.
I would say Hugh Freeze said at his very first press conference that this year has to be more transfer portal because they need to get more players in.
Because if you go into year one, even if you acknowledge it's year one, I think if you go into year one and you don't show improvement over the previous season, if things get worse from what you inherited, it makes folks nervous, and especially in an era where you can bring in veteran talent like never before. So, yeah, no, I agree. I think Hugh Freeze had to hit the portal. He may have to do it again next year to replace a lot of players leaving on this year's team. But the goal is to build valuable relationships with the key high school figures and get the pipeline flowing.
There wouldn't be as many leaving. I mean, I don't think that you have to replace as you had this year. I mean, Auburn does have around 20 seniors, so but you want to get a good group of high schoolers and then fill in the the holes.
Okay, so how about this? Do you think Hugh Freeze has a shot of assembling a top 10 high school class in 2024?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Auburn almost just without even trying is top 20. So, I mean, what that is two or three very highly touted players will get you into the top 10 if you're already a top 20 program.
And then overachieving on the field potentially in 2023 could help that even more, right? Because then you're talking about some of those players in wait-and-see mode and what they decide to do. So that was, yeah.
Hugh's a good salesman. I think he can also sell some kids on you're the guy that's going to make us a contender type thing.
How about this? What position group on the offense do you think is most vital to success in Hugh Freeze's first year?
This first year? Quarterback.
I said quarterback too.
I mean, the offensive line's vital, but if you don't get good quarterback play, and I think Auburn's offensive line play will be better. So, I mean, quarterback play's got to be. I think Auburn's got a great tight end group. They've got, I think they've got a solid offensive line. They've got a really good running back room. We'll find out about the receivers, but the receivers are going to look good. A lot of it's going to depend on, how good the quarterback is at finding him and getting the ball.
Yeah, I acknowledged how important all the other positions are in deciding how well the quarterback plays, but I said quarterback too because it's hard to envision a scenario where the offense takes a big step forward, but the quarterback play remains
mediocre.
at the level it was last year, and the passing numbers
don't improve. It can't take that big step forward without that.
It seems like you would need a breakthrough there, and that's not to say. I mean, look, maybe it's Robbie, taking that step forward.
I'm not saying who it is, but the quarterback play has to be.
But yeah, it's
better.
I agree. I think it's quarterback as well. Now, how about this one, Bill? Because you've been to your fair share of road games. You've been to other SEC stadiums. You're in a better position to answer this one than me because I haven't been to a non-Jordan-Hare Stadium SEC game in a very long time. So because I had between after the game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Some of the stuff. So I'm going to try to go to one either this year or next year, but. So we had someone asking, what do you think Auburn needs to do to update Jordan-Hare Stadium? I'll read from the question, quote, "I've recently been to Mississippi State, Arkansas, and TCU, And aside from game atmosphere, they're all better than Jordan-Hare. Exteriors, concourses, concessions, fan areas, etc. In my opinion, Auburn should clear these schools easily. Unquote. Bill.
Well, I think one of the things, I wish they'd been able to do the project that that was put forward a few years ago, which included the north end zone and was going to make it sort of like Mississippi State's, in that they have a big area where folks can walk, sort of like the situation in Atlanta with the Braves Stadium. I mean, where there's a huge concourse area where fans can watch, but there's also concessions and beverages and things like that. There are also more that was going to be something that was going to be more premium seating. I think that's something that needs to be done. I would love the exterior to be, man, it just seems dingy. I said
parts of the outside need a facelift.
They do.
Part of, yeah, I mean,
I think, first of all, it needs to be either pressure washed or something. I mean, it just looks dirty.
Or replaced with a different,
right.
with a different facade.
Yeah, yeah. And then I also think that the south end zone needs to have something done to it where it looks like it's part of the stadium.
I mean, as it stands now, it does match Beard Eve's, but that's not.
Yeah, well, that's not saying much.
Same color stone, but
And I mentioned some of the things you can do. You can't really increase the size of the concourses without taking out some serious seats. I mean, that would be a much, much bigger project. I'd love something better than that scoreboard in the north end zone.
North end zone.
The north end zone is just, it just looks old.
I think for folks who don't face the video board, right? Like for folks in the stadium who aren't facing the video board, I think the experience could be improved as far as what the north end zone looks like. I listed the north end zone and the outside sort of facing Donahue as the parts that I would target most urgently. But I also defer to people who go to other SEC stadiums or other Power 5 schools, football stadium. I mean, I've been to Sun Devil Stadium in the last decade or so for a game, and There's some cool things there, but a lot of the innovations there are attempts to counteract the fact that it's 115 degrees for a lot of those games. Because you could, I mean, what could you put? I don't know. Could you put more people in the shade for certain? You know, for certain. I don't know. Like, are there ways to guard more people from the sun? I don't know if there's necessarily.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. Okay, how about this?
Well, I mean, if you had a north end zone thing where you could walk out, that would protect an awful lot of people up there, I guess. But
all right. Do you subscribe to the conspiracy theory that some schools use recruits as plants to spy on other schools during recruiting, or do you think this is just paranoia?
I think it's mostly paranoia.
I think so too.
I don't. I'm not saying it never happens. You're taking a big chance. You'd better absolutely know 100% that player is not ever going to change his mind if you're thinking of doing that.
Yeah,
I'm sure it happens, but
it's a player you're trying to employ as a spy that you need to be able to totally trust.
Right.
Here, right? Like, you want someone, like, this is espionage. Like, this is a messy sort of game. And in the NIL era, I mean, you encourage a player to go on a fact-finding mission on an official visit somewhere else. What happens when he hears a better offer?
Yeah. Really, really likes it there and feels like, oh, I could play here.
Yeah, or he meets a girl. Right?
Yeah,
we've heard some stories about that. So I would, I would say it's a dangerous game to play if you're choosing to do that. But I don't know. I don't know how often it's actually done. But you better know what you're doing if you're going to try something like that.
We need to get to our final break here of hour number one. Bill and Dan with you. Got Graham at the controls as we move along here on a Friday afternoon. We'll get to our next break coming up. I know we're getting calls coming in, so we'll go ahead and get to our final break and right back with your phone calls here on the Friday Drive.
You're live. on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in to The Drive on this Friday afternoon. Let's see, you've got Super Regionals going on, four on the schedule today, and in the opening game, the Duke Blue Devils hung on. I mean, barely hung on. They jumped out to a lead. Virginia came back and looked like they had maybe had a walk-off home run, but the ball coming up just short, and Duke beats the seeded home team there in game one of the Super Regional at Virginia, 5-4. Meanwhile, Indiana State, the seeded team in the regional, but they didn't have the facilities to be able to host. They're at TCU. Even though they're the home team, Indiana State playing away from home, trailing TCU in the bottom of the third, 3-0. Later on,
I think Florida South Carolina is about to start.
South Carolina should be starting, and then a couple of hours until Oral Roberts and Oregon.
And that and the Oral Roberts started. The Oral Roberts Oregon game is going to be on ESPN tomorrow. You've got Alabama Wake Forest at on ESPN. That's the early game
right
tomorrow morning. Alabama taking on the one seed.
So you'll Wake have eight Forest games tomorrow. The first game ones of the other four series, game two of these four series.
Tennessee Southern Miss is going to be on ESPNU. That game at that game is a 2 o'clock game, I believe. And the Tennessee favored, you know, one of the top. I just saw the number. Here you go. I know we got a caller that we will get to briefly, but the favorite to win it all right now, Wake Forest, about 4-1 odds. Virginia at 6-1. That was before today's game. LSU's at 6.5-1. Florida's at 7-1. Tennessee's at 9-1. South Carolina 12-1. Kentucky 12-1. Southern Miss all the way down 35-1 odds to win it all. I think
I put a dollar on that.
I think Southern Miss is better than that. I think that's the odds that caught my eye.
Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. As far as the improvements to the stadium, I'd like to see a parking deck at the north end zone and, possibly some premium seats above or maybe suites.
On the north end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that sounds like a great idea because, you know, that you really can't drive much farther than that anyway if you're coming from the north side. So, you know, I've been waiting for the parking deck there where the Coliseum is, but they've got to, you know, find places for everybody that still has offices in there.
Yeah. Well, just a suggestion.
Yeah, I like it. It'll be interesting. All right, so, hey, you know what I hadn't seen? I hadn't seen any news of the Board of Trustees and the baseball upgrade. Trustees were supposed to be meeting yesterday and today.
Now, what did they hire an architect firm for? That there was news about that.
Right.
That's for the actual athletic department building. Like there's something there was news about the Board of Trustees voting on.
They were
on
expected
something, right?
To expected to approve, you know, all the upgrades there for baseball. So yeah, good stuff there, Jerry.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Yep. So, if you have any ideas of how Jordan-Hare Stadium could be upgraded, because that's always one of the questions people ask. When is Jordan-Hare Stadium going to get something done to it? Well, what do you think would be the best plan to try to upgrade Jordan-Hare Stadium? 334-321-1390. So I was mentioning TCU out to a 3-0 lead over Indiana State, South Carolina, and Florida. The next game, then the final game of the day is Oral Roberts and Oregon. So, yeah, the Super Regional is going on. I would imagine the odds have gone up for Virginia now.
Okay, so a project that was approved April 14th is the upcoming renovations at the Auburn Athletics Complex. And the Board of Trustees this morning approved an architecture firm for it. Say
anything? Does it say anything about baseball?
Say in Litchfield. Though? I'll see what I can find.
This because I thought that was expected to be.
See
to be announced.
What we have on. Don't have anything yet. I'll see what I can. I'll see what I can find.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Friday Drive. Come on in and join us in hour number two.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Graham at the controls, Drew. Hoping that he's not Wally Pipped when he comes back, as Drew
in the Berg,
up in Pittsburgh this week, and he'll be back sometime next week. But we're here with hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care.
Duquesne's in Pittsburgh. You probably could ask Chad Baker Mazzara for some recommendations or something before
I didn't think of that. He was there for a while in his travels.
And they're both Northwest Florida guys because Chad Baker Mazzara.
Well, maybe he did.
Maybe he did. Maybe the three of us, we'll have him on and we'll talk about his favorite spots in Niceville to go
him
get food
and
around
CBM.
The, yep. Oh, man. Chad Baker Mazzara.
Yep. All right. Look,
I think
Orthopedic Clinic.
Yeah,
East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care.
Chad Baker Mazzara.
They have locations in Auburn and Opelika, and they're on the web at orthoclinic.com.
Doesn't seem like we're going to get baseball in the South Carolina Florida series anytime soon.
It was raining sideways, and they showed the radar. And
what's the Bill Murray? What's the Caddyshack heavy stuff? Heavy stuff hadn't gotten here yet. Heavy stuff hadn't even started.
Real
to come
heavy stuff, man. I mean, yeah, like you were saying, it was purplish.
Yeah,
not just orange on the way.
Yeah, I would go into. I mean, not to get into the whole box of crayons, but I would say magenta, fuchsia, like that. That's sort of the colors you're seeing on the radar. Even lavender, even. So I mean, you're seeing some colors that. The radar would suggest very heavy rain. I tossed the idea out there because where are you from Gainesville? 90 minutes or so from downtown Tampa, maybe 2 hours or so.
It's closer to two.
If you're looking at a rain out all weekend, you call Tampa Bay up and you see if you can play the game at the Trop under the roof. But unfortunately, the Rays are playing this weekend at home, so you're not going to be able to do that either. So I guess they just hope the sun shines in Gainesville, but it could be a while for a series. And I would say we were talking about the odds for teams to win the championship, Bill. I would say the winner of that Florida-South Carolina series probably goes into the College World Series as one of your top teams on the board.
And remember, South Carolina took the series. They may have swept down in Gainesville earlier, but that was earlier. We will see, but they're probably not going to be able to play at least for a while there today. We'd love for you to join in here on the Friday edition of The Drive. And, of course, the way to do that is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. The number to get you through, 334-321-1390. And Jeff is hanging on. Hey, Jeff. Jeff, you there?
Caller, you're on the line.
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, guys?
Yeah, doing fine, man. How's it going?
Oh, sorry. I was riding. I think I hit a bad area there.
Oh, that's fine.
All good. We can hear you now.
Good. How you doing? Been a minute since I talked. With regard to the facilities, Bill, you hit it right. The outside, man, that place looks ancient. Looks like an old ancient Roman building.
Well, it looks dirty is the sad thing. I mean, it's just sort of dingy. I mean, it needs to be brightened up.
It does. Some paint. You know, you see A&M Stadium on the outside. Man, those places look fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just put a new coat of marble or something over that old stuff. Put some paint on it. You're right. It looks like it hadn't been washed in about 25 years.
And I think what hurts especially is when you can see Auburn Arena or Plainsman Park and draw the contrast. You know, right there, let alone going to a different park, like you guys are saying. I joked earlier that it happens to be the same color as Beard Eve's Coliseum, but like that's not, it's not an argument to maintain the status quo.
Well, that's not saying much.
No, you're right.
Yeah, Beard is, you know, well, we know it's ancient. But yeah, and on the outside, you know, I think the lighting too. We're still running that old fluorescent lighting, you know. It needs to be more LED lighting on the exterior, especially at nighttime.
Yeah, yes. You know, speaking of lights, you know, I think what they've done with the light show at the end of the third quarter, the in-game experience light show, you know, that's great. But no, I would agree. You know, I think there are some, like, they've done an excellent job, I think, of trying to maximize the experience when you're inside the stadium. But, you know, we're talking about the north end zone. I think there's something that could be improved there. But from, you know, looking at Jordan-Hare from different parts of campus or approaching it from Donahue, I think there are things visually that probably, and I don't know what these things cost, but I think there are probably some things visually you could do to make it just look a little better. Still there, Jeff?
He may have gotten into a bad area.
I appreciate it,
good
Jeff.
Stuff, Jeff. Though, yeah. I mean, I agree with everything you said. Sorry, it seems like we lost you there as we continue here on the Friday edition
most,
of the Drive.
Most places, and this isn't necessarily a stadium, this isn't a Jordan-Hare Stadium thing, though. Most places would have knocked down Beard Eve's by now, too, right? I mean, you think like most. I mean,
oh yeah, and I think everybody expected that to happen. But the problem is there's some offices in there. You're hoping that now with football having its own building, that more folks can move into the athletics, into the athletics building. But there are some offices, there are still some classrooms.
You know, and I used to
hear in the Coliseum. That would be such a perfect spot for a combination parking deck and other offices.
It just seems like prime real estate.
On campus. Absolutely right, in the heart of campus.
At the moment, it's a huge building too. Like, yes. And it is used for wheelchair basketball,
right?
At the moment, I know they made. Actually, if you're in Beard Eve's, the court is gorgeous. Like, they maintain the, you know, it's not for public use. You know, the court inside Beard Eve's is maintained and looks great, and people use it for, they use the concourse for exercise,
yep.
And people run the stairs and things like that. But it's just surprising that, you know, we're coming up on, I think we've already reached the 10-year anniversary,
yes,
of the opening of Auburn Arena,
mm-hmm.
and Beard Eve's is still sitting there. And I used to hear, and I'm no expert on removing buildings from areas, I used to hear that the asbestos was something that people were worried about, that Beard Eve's may in fact be, you know, a building loaded with insulation that would be expensive and dangerous to try to remove. But I would imagine, Bill, that's also true of all the dorms they're tearing down on the other side of campus, and that hasn't stopped them from
been there as long as the Coliseum.
And
Coliseum was opened in 1969.
Have you been to that side of campus lately?
Yes, I have.
I went to parking services the other day.
Well, when I have to, like when I'm going to baseball and things like that, sometimes I'm coming along and having to go through all that construction.
And it's going to look great, but
yep.
Right now it's Mad Max.
It's a mess.
Now it looks like, looks like something out of Dune. So it's, you know, it's not. I'm surprised that hasn't been seen as more of an urgent need as to get Beard Eve's. I'm not advocating to tear it down, but at the same time,
the thing is relocating the folks that are using it right now.
Right.
That's the thing. There's not available space, or there hasn't been available space for the people that are still in it.
There are a couple offices, like there are a couple of departments that are still largely based out of Beardy's Coliseum, and I imagine the plan was to move some of those folks. I don't know how many of them there are anymore, but yeah, I would think they got to find, it's a big campus, they got to find room somewhere, right?
Yeah, well, there's less and less room all the time. Where's HPR now? I mean, that's where they were.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it's where they were doing
I think they still are. It's where, huh?
The concourse is where they were doing the vaccines, absolutely, right? They were administering on-campus vaccines there on the concourse during COVID. It was pretty valuable to have a space that something that big and relatively ventilated that you could utilize for that. But it just most places that build a new on-campus arena, you know, it's not long before the old on-campus arena
is
demolished and replaced by whatever you need that space for.
Yeah, and I'm surprised. I'm quite frankly surprised that it's still standing there, because Auburn could really, really use more parking. I mean, for the folks that work at Auburn, and for the huge crowds that come in for athletics.
Yeah, I think there are ideas, and I know the master plan. I think if you look up the university, you know what they plan to do with their facilities. I think the master plan still calls for Beardy Eves to be replaced and for that space to be repurposed. But yeah, I think between parking and between it's unpopular compared to some other stuff, but I would say maybe consider some green space, you know, on campus and some more, you know, sort of public student land, you know, to give folks. I mean, there's any number of things you could do potentially with that part of campus, and so that's something else I would lump in with the with potential upgrades to the athletic experience.
Were you done with the questions you wanted to pass along from the mailbag? The one you were talking about off the air, I think would be a fun one for folks.
Yeah. So we didn't get into the logo one that I'd.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting one.
So it was. Well, first of all, it got into the question starts with the conversation we had on the air about nicknames and Bill. I still think Cadillac Williams is sort of the gold standard for a nickname for an Auburn football player. You know, it's become this, you know, in to the degree that now, you know, folks are surprised to learn about his name being Carnell,
right?
But
yeah, they only know him by Cadillac.
Is there any nicknames that you really were fan, you know, is there anything that comes to mind as far as a nickname that you thought really fit a player or was catchy,
Auburn
or
players?
Innovative? Yeah, Auburn player, anything
I'll go a ways back, and Mike Colon was Captain Crunch.
That's good. That's a good one. Sure. I mean Frank Thomas also, you know, the big hurt's just a great nickname for an Auburn
Charles
player.
Charles was the round mound of rebound.
Somebody pointed out Markeith the Lizard Cooper, which is one that I was less familiar with. Antoine Hotboy Carter.
Hotboy.
I did like Hotboy. All right, so a couple nicknames there.
Yeah, you see, some of them I'm trying to recall, but if you say their name, I'll probably remember the nickname.
Trey Blackman, the little ball of hate, you know, I thought a great nickname for a linebacker. And then the other part of this question was, if you could replace the AU logo with another logo on the helmet as part of an alternate uniform, what logo would you go with on the helmet? That's not to say that you prefer this logo to the current helmet, but if you had to change the logo on the helmet for an alternate uniform, for a special occasion or something, what logo would you like to see on the helmet other than
the interlocking AU?
The interlocking AU.
Yeah, because if you say the block, because that was, you know, one that was popular there with the baseball was just the block A.
Right,
but I like
which is similar to the A that the eagle flies through, right? In the logo, which is also that's one logo I think you could
that
go
is
with
one
in that situation. I threw out the tiger eyes that I would say is
tiger eyes would look cool on a helmet.
On a helmet, and I said that's probably like your 98 to 08 or so. That's your Tuberville era. Predominantly, let's say it was only used in the Tuberville era, but I feel like it's a Tuberville era thing. In fact, I didn't throw this out there in the mailbag, Bill, but if you're going to do this, I think like if you wanted to commemorate the 04 team somehow, right, like a 20-year or 25-year anniversary of the 04 team, like Tiger Eyes on the side of the helmet would be, even though they didn't have the Tiger Eyes on the side of their helmets,
yeah,
like a way to...
If you're largely had them on the hip pad.
They had them on the hip pad, but some way to incorporate the Tiger Eyes into either an 03 or an 04 team, probably 04, because of the fact that they were undefeated SEC champions. Like that's a team you commemorate with a special occasion jersey or a special special acknowledgement at the stadium. That'd be some. And again, I'm largely don't touch the uniform. Like I'm not an alternate uniform guy. I'm not someone who thinks you need to tinker with it too much. But I was asked the question. I thought the person deserved an answer. I would say Tiger Eyes would be my alternate uniform to throw on a logo.
Yeah,
or
so
throw on a helmet.
We'll toss that out to you if you had to. Change the logo on the Auburn helmet, what would you go with? 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive continues. Continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan got Graham at the controls, and let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, I got excited about hearing this logo thing because in my younger days at Auburn, I was in visual design, which is advertising art, and it certainly covers logos, and I've always been fascinated with logos. I look
sure.
at people's logos, and I go, man, I wouldn't do that, or well, that's a really good logo, that kind of thing. But my idea for a logo, then, is this. You know how an A has two legs that go up to a point?
Yes.
Okay, well, at the point, there'd be no point. It would be a curve. It'd be a nice little curve. And there'd be no horizontal dash. You just go up, curve over, and come down at the bottom.
A rounded A?
Like an upside-down U.
A.
Like an upside-down
right.
U.
And that, well, then the amount around it A goes to the bottom and starts another curve, an exact identical curve, and goes up like the right side of
right,
a U.
Right, right.
And so, it would just look like a sine wave.
Somebody, yes, I was going to say that's the symbol of something.
Let's say a roller coaster.
Well, I know. But,
there would be where the dash on the A was, there'd be a tiger eye. And so there's my.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, what Dan was doing was throwing out some of the ones people have used before. That's cool. I mean, think about that. Yeah.
And I hope maybe I get some credit if they do that.
Oh, absolutely. We'd go, that's Yellowhammer's AU.
Right. Okay. At least they give me some tickets or something.
I like it. That's interesting. Just one tiger eye for the dash?
Yeah, the okay. one tiger eye for the dash.
And got the eye of the tiger.
Wave, more
got
or less.
The eye of the tiger there on the A. Okay, uh-huh. Got it.
So you have like an upside down U, with a U. With a tiger eye
connected
inside
to
it.
A U.
And then a U.
Yes.
All right. Uh-huh. And it's all one line. It's just one curvilinear line.
Yeah. Where if you didn't notice the tiger eye, you'd think it was a rounded N.
You might mistake it for that. You
right.
sure could. That'd be terrible. So, yeah, we gotta bring people back in and focus on our subject here. And so that would be the way to kind of pull it back in to where people made sense. Because, you know, there are a lot of logos out there. You look at them and go, well, what in that world is that?
Yeah, one of the things, Auburn has had so many different ones through the years, and that's one of the things we were thinking about. You know, you had the tiger eye that was popular in the 90s. You had the old Aubie with the small cap, remember? You had that. That was still very popular now in T-shirts and sweatshirts. You had
Aubie is the best mascot out there. I look at other people's mascots, and we have the best.
You had the leaping tiger through the A, and then you also had the flying eagle through the A. Those are just some those are ones I can just recall off the top of my head.
Well, maybe we could take my design and work an eagle in there too. I don't know. It's getting crowded in there, maybe.
Yeah, I hear you. Good stuff, Yellowhammer.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the call. 334-321-1390. Bill is up next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was wondering, you talked about the stadium and the parking outside the, as long as the university keeps getting bigger and taking more and more students. I think when I went there, it was 14,000 in the 70s, and now it's well over that.
Well, it's more than you'll double that, yeah.
You'll never be able to tear Beard Eve down because right now it's housing everybody who gets displaced by the last building got torn down.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
I was a part of a crew that went over there. It's been a while back, but there was a people doing scientific experiments in the old weight room. They're absolutely utilizing about everything in that building they can muster. I don't see how they ever tear it down.
But wouldn't it be great if all of a sudden you could just, you know, snap your fingers and now it's a building that has offices and tons of parking?
Also seems like it would be a pretty significant disruption to everything that goes on campus around there.
Oh, you're not
right?
Kidding.
Like, I mean, to try to have
access to the stadiums.
Yeah, to try to have a football or basketball season around the destruction of Beard Eve's Coliseum, I think would be a tall task as well. So
I'm sorry. Bill, you're much more versed than I am at the utilization of the buildings, but Beard Eve holds a lot of people doing a lot of things in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not abandoned like a lot of people.
No. I think some people feel like it is, but no, it's not. I mean, there are plenty of people that are in there, and that's what the biggest problem is what do you do with them? Even if you were able to get something done in a very short period of time,
and most schools do abandon their on-campus building when they replace it, you know, when the arena is replaced. That's not to say Auburn needs to do it, but it's odd to have, say, a decade later to have the former arena still standing where it stood while the new arena has replaced it for men's and women's basketball.
Yeah, that's just like when Turner Field was built right next to Atlanta Stadium. Obviously, Atlanta Stadium didn't hang around much longer. But, as long as the university keeps getting bigger and bigger, as it, you know, it is, I just don't see how they'll ever do it. I'm sure they will someday. It may not be while I'm around, but, you know, they tore all the old dorms down on West Sanford on the hill.
Right.
And now the college education's going up there, so where'd those people go?
Maybe into the Coliseum. I don't know.
But Dan's got a good point. You don't see structures hanging around that once were the basketball arena. Now, you know, 10 years later, they're still there.
Although I could be wrong about that. I mean, I'm thinking about
I think you're very accurate, Dan. I think you're very accurate about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I mean, usually the destruction of the previous arena is part of it, but like at I don't know. You know, you think about places that have upgraded their, like, I'm not sure if Ole Miss tore down their old basketball arena. I know they've upgraded with a new one recently. Does the building that Kentucky played in pre-Rupp, is that
it is still there?
That one's still there, right? Because
yeah.
They use it for
the women.
I believe the women play there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they're very proud of that tradition up there. That Moore Coliseum's not going anywhere. I don't think Bill know that, but maybe before your time, Dan. But that's not going anywhere. But
no.
I think women play there. I think gymnastics is there. But anyway, the north end zone, Bill. Just again, this is before your time, Dan. But the north end zone. I think my first game I ever went to as a teenager was 1970. Georgia Tech Auburn. I think Bob Hope was the homecoming guest that night. Do you remember that, Bill?
Bob Hope was the homecoming guest quite a few times, but yeah,
okay,
I do.
Well, this was 1970, but those south,
oh, yeah, I
that
definitely
north
remember.
End zone looks exactly then like it does now. With
you're
exception,
right.
It has aluminum bleachers, so those wooden bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice stadium. You know, winning takes care of everything. If you win a few more games, you get more. You know, contributions coming in. It's a nice stadium. They did do a lot of pressure washing last summer on the upper decks that you were talking about earlier without looking dingy. And it still could use a little more, but they have made it looks a lot better than it did 2 years ago.
So how about this development? So not only is the Tad Pad still at Ole Miss and available for, I guess, not unlike Beard Eves, it's a place where students and staff can exercise. And I don't think the court is available, but there's still offices in the Tad Smith Coliseum. Chris Beard, in an interview last month, threw out the possibility of Ole Miss having a throwback game at Tad Smith Coliseum next season. He says he's done it at other schools.
Yep. Texas, there was talk about Auburn doing that when they needed more space.
Texas Tech and Little Rock, he's had success with throwback game events at previous schools. And, I mean, I don't know if the logistics make that a possibility for Auburn. I think for a big game, it'd be really cool if Auburn broke out Beard Eves Coliseum and actually played a game there. Like, if you're going to keep it around, you know, that's another possibility, is actually using it once in a while and I'm sure there are a multitude of reasons why that's not a good idea, but I think that actually could be pretty cool.
Well, one of the scoreboards gone now, the one that hung over the midcourt. I don't know how they handle that, but that's an interesting idea.
We got TVs. We got TVs. We got TVs in Ramsey. We can cobble together a scoreboard. We got a guy.
Dan, next time you fly, you talking about last week? I was talking. You didn't like to fly. You're a big guy. You got to buy a first class ticket. Get the extra leg room.
You know, it is worth it. I flew to Colorado a couple years ago to visit family, and or I flew back from Colorado after a road trip, actually. And the I think it was Frontier. I don't want to name it, but I sprung for the extra leg room, and it was a good thing I did, because I don't believe I would have fit in the seat had I.
No, I'm telling you. I mean, I'm not as tall as you, and I've had a couple of flights where I felt like I was gonna, the person in front of me didn't, you know, thought I was intentionally trying to hurt them when it was just my knees wouldn't fit.
It's awful to say this because
I have to get an aisle seat.
I have fighter pilot blood, you know, pumping through me, Bill. You know this, but like, right. So I don't like to say it, but I would rather ride on a bus or drive probably three times as long as I would need to be on an airplane and getting through security and stuff. Like I would take a 12-hour bus ride over a 4-hour flight.
Wow. Are you sure about that?
I mean, wow. I did it enough times.
Because of the ability to move around and stop and things. I mean, just I've been there. I mean, it's not easy for guys like me.
Guys, I enjoy the show and Wardle.
Appreciate the call.
I'm talking a charter bus. I'm not talking school buses here. We're not saying I'm not riding the big yellow for 12 hours or anything like that. But we've been afforded some nice buses in our time traveling in the Sun Belt.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in. Do you have an idea? I mean, you can choose from one of the logos that Auburn has used in the past, or you can be like Yellowhammer and come up with your own. I've done my headphones cord, like he said. I just don't have the tiger eye to put right here.
I drew as best I could. I sort of drew what he was envisioning. There you go.
That's not bad.
That's what it looks like. And the What do you think of the idea of a throwback game at Beard Eves for the men's basketball team?
I've thought that was a pretty good idea. The logistics would be a bit of a pain. What do you do with your season ticket holders and things like that? You'd have to reconfigure where everybody's going to be. Would you just be able to have the jungle? I mean,
a couple of areas blocked off for season ticket holders, and you say this is your seat for the game.
I think it'd
be
a good idea. I thought that was pretty cool when there was some talk about, well, there's just not enough seats for all the interest that there is.
You know what?
There's we more might, room you in
know,
the Coliseum.
You know when we might need it is when USC comes to town. If Bronny and DJ Rodman and Isaiah Collier, you know, if it's the Beatles like people think it's going to be when those guys are on the road, and there is, in fact, because it's been rumored, I don't know if Auburn's sent out confirmation or anything. The rumor is that there's going to be USC at Auburn. I mean, it was reported when Auburn signed the series. Right, that USC, yeah. Auburn was going to go to USC.
It's going to be home at home,
and then USC was going to follow it up a year later. I mean, this would be that would be one of the biggest. USC coming here would be one of the bigger out of conference games Auburn has played in town in a very long time.
Yeah, Auburn played UNLV, Tark and oh man, who was the lefty?
Was it Larry Johnson?
No. 6'7", 6'8" thin.
Stacey Augmon?
No, I'll think of it. But I mean, it was a great Vegas team that came in on a Sunday and played, and that was a pretty hot ticket. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us in the final half hour here on the Friday Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive, Bill and Dan. Yeah, it was the 1987, February 1st of 87, Armand Gilliam, 31, Freddie Banks, 36, 9 of 13 from 3, and Vegas, the number 3 team in the country, beat Auburn, which was ranked 18th, 104-85. They made 14 of 28 threes. Sonny Smith said at the time, they're, quote, the best team I've seen. It was unbelievable, Sonny said. They did it from every area of the court. Never seen anything like it. A crowd of 12,584, which at the time was the second largest basketball crowd in Memorial Coliseum history.
I mean, I was at my share of Kentucky and Alabama games in Beard Eves Coliseum before it was replaced. I feel like I have an idea of what that place looks like when it's at capacity
and
rocking.
It's awful loud.
12,584. Yeah. For a couple of teams playing like that must have been something to see. And I think we're in agreement here, Bill. Like, the logistics would be difficult if not impossible, but it would be really cool if Auburn played.
It'd be fun,
and it would probably need to be an out of conference game. I don't know how things work in the SEC, but if Auburn could find an out of conference opponent, heck, what's UNLV up to? Find someone and play a throwback game in the Coliseum. That would be really cool.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Specter is up next. Hey, Specter.
Hey, guys. Just catching in. You were talking about logos. I think my favorite logo was the tiger eyes on the stadium, and where they lit, especially when they lit up at night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Why did they take that down?
I think it was just wanting to make a change from that was pretty much considered that was a Tommy Tuberville thing. It was just sort of let's go back to more traditional, the interlocking AU. I think the tiger eyes would look cool on a helmet.
Yeah, I remember Jay Jacobs giving an interview where he talked about, I want to say this was during the 2010 season, where it might not have been Jay, in which case I would apologize profusely. But I remember the desire for Auburn to make the AU logo that's sort of synonymous with Auburn, mm-hmm. the only logo in use.
That was at the time talking about the tiger eyes, the leaping tiger, the flying through the A eagle.
Like, they sort of want the only logo to be the AU, the interlocking AU logo. And so logos like the tiger eyes and the eagle flying through the A and the tiger with a hat on.
Was that the same time, or was that before they decided they wanted to get rid of that little bitty space?
That's later,
oh,
right?
Man,
when they
that
when
was
they changed
so ridiculous.
It. And then there was also the talk of like, wasn't there a debate about using that instead of the seal,
yes,
sort of academically?
I think so.
That you know
yes.
you remember there was a firestorm about that, you know, and whether or not they should be using
don't
that
use
instead of the
Samford Hall. Yeah, all
yeah.
Those
should the interlocking right. AU be used beyond academics for branding stuff like that, Specter?
Is this just gossip, or is there a proposal out there?
Oh, no. That was actually just a question on the mailbag. Somebody said if Auburn had to go with something other than the AU, it was just asking, thoughts of what logo would be used.
Specter,
so that's why we were tossing it out there, just asking people, what logo do you like if not the AU?
Justin Ferguson's on vacation, so I was answering his mailbag form in the Observer, and the one of the questions was if you were going to do an alternate uniform, and you had to pick a logo other than the interlocking AU to put on the helmet, what would you choose? And I think that and the idea I tossed out there was if you wanted to commemorate the 04 team and you wanted to do a 20-year anniversary uniform that incorporated the Tiger Eyes either on the helmet or somewhere, I think that could be a cool flourish because, like Bill was saying, that's sort of identified with the era. the tiger eyes. And they had it on, what was it, the there was somewhere on the uniform, right? They had
it was there on the hip.
The hip pad had the tiger eyes on it there in the 04 season. So you could do something like that, even though the tiger eyes were not the logo that they used on the helmet in 2004.
Well, switching gears, Jordan-Hare Stadium, now, it probably never happened in our lifetime, but I would like to see an open dome, like a sky dome or something. Something like Mercedes-Benz. You know, that's a big price tag there.
Oh, yeah, it is. And usually those are done in places where you have really inclement weather. Now, it gets hot, and we know that, and it can be cold. But, I mean, usually you think of those in places where there's just expected heavy rains or snow
I would guess right now, and because I'm and apologize if I'm forgetting somebody, I would think there's not a retractable roof on campus stadium in college athletics. Now, that's not to say that that's a bad idea, but there are places that have it in baseball, a couple of football stadiums in the NFL in bigger cities. I don't know if that's gotten to college athletics yet.
If I'm not mistaken, I think there is some college where they may be used by other teams, like semi-pro or pro teams. But I think they're up, especially up in Dakotas. I think there's domes up there for college teams.
Oh, I think there are domes. Retractable roofs, though, are a different sort of story than a total. I mean, Syracuse plays in a dome. The Carrier
That's
Dome
right.
is
right.
you know hosts
right.
Syracuse. There are a few indoor venues. I think the Michigan one of the Michigan schools I think plays at Ford Field. One of the directionals. I want to say something. There's some indoor. Yeah, you're right. In the Northeast and places where the winter gets really brutal, there are some places playing indoor. But
I tell you what, the day that I thought of an indoor stadium was a day. My Lord, the rain came down.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we've had a couple. You know, the thing is, it's if that were something that were happening, you know, on a regular basis during the season, and you know, you were having games that were being delayed or postponed or things like that, then you might think about it. But yeah, I mean, unless you hit a lottery and you've got extra multi-millions, it's probably pretty unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, especially because I feel like the fall weather is
But just think it could be the Spectre Dome.
Yeah, but the fall weather is one of the weather in the fall is one of the selling points for Auburn. So I don't know if they'd want to enclose that within a within a dome, although
you had the coolest dome ever. I mean,
well, no,
that'd be
no,
a selling point,
and,
too.
And I would point out that both the NFL teams in Atlanta and New Orleans play in domes, and there are some, right. You know, it's not like it's a thing that no one in the South is doing, but you're not seeing it in college football.
Well, Bill, if I get the Spectre Dome, then I'd have to make a large contribution.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You need to hit on those numbers pretty soon.
All right, buddy, I'll do that. Y'all have a nice weekend.
All right, Spectre, you too. 334-321-1390.
Maybe if there was an Armageddon-esque scenario where Spectre saved us from a meteor, maybe they'd name the stadium after him. Maybe if Spectre could, you know, arrange some way that he could be the Bruce Willis that saves us from the from the asteroid.
Well, I'm watching Silo.
Yeah, what do you think?
It's back on tonight. I like it.
Okay.
So far, I like it. I'm intrigued.
I'm post Succession. There's not like a show making new episodes.
Well, the thing is, I know you like to watch a lot of them at once, and I think they've only been like three episodes.
I gotta do the last season of Barry. Although I'm not looking forward to it. From everybody I talk to, it sounds like it's gonna be grueling homework. And then, which is a bummer because I've loved that show. But then there's also you get the Gemstones coming back pretty soon too, which I'm excited. I thought the last season of the Gemstones. It turned into an action movie, which I wasn't expecting, but I thought there was some really funny stuff in the last season of that show.
When's it back? I think it's a couple of weeks.
I think it's a week
like
from
July?
Sunday. I think it's a week from Sunday.
Before July?
I don't know what HBO has on Sunday nights other than the weekend show that I'm not going to watch. I believe a week from Sunday is the first new Gemstones.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to that too, and got a couple of You know, it's summer blockbuster time, getting close to that. So, I mean, there are a couple of couple of things I'm looking forward to.
Are you a fan of the Mission Impossible films? I think Tom Cruise has done a good job with those.
They, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them. I mean, they're all right.
I'm looking for it. Like, if
they're
fun,
but I mean, it's not like, oh, I'm dying
to pick like a movie. If I had to pick like a movie I'm excited for this summer, I mean, I would say Oppenheimer because I'm a nerd for like the Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, I keep getting notifications. It's getting closer.
I'm very excited for Oppenheimer, but I'd say after Oppenheimer, I'm a Tom Cruise guy. I want to see what crazy stuff.
How disappointed I am in the last indie movie.
Oh yeah, I mean they got sort of an Irishman thing going on, right? Where they're making him younger.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's
I don't know either.
You know, I read recently that the Cape Fear remake they did like 30 years ago, the Nick Nolte Cape Fear.
Right.
Do you know that Scorsese wanted Harrison Ford to play the lawyer, the Nick Nolte part,
uh-huh.
And Harrison Ford agreed to do it. If he could be Max Cady. Harrison Ford wanted to play the De Niro part.
Oh, wow.
And they decided, I mean, that was going to be De Niro the whole time, so that was sort of off the table. And so Scorsese went with Nick Nolte instead. But Harrison Ford was considered for the lawyer, but he wanted to do Max Cady. And I think imagining Harrison Ford in either of those parts
makes it a
way different movie, but still.
You're not kidding.
And that's a, not for kids, great movie. If you've never seen
the original,
they're both.
Man, I
think
the
they're
original.
Both home runs. But if you've never seen Cape Fear, the 91 remake of Cape Fear is just that's a grand slam home run of a film.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Now, more of the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment here on the Friday Drive. Been a fun show. I mean, I'm glad that you had some fun things you tossed out there from the Observer mailbag.
Yeah, and then there were also some there were questions from folks about movies and what have you. How about this, Bill? And you don't have to answer it now. I mean, although we're running out of time here on the show.
We've got 4 minutes. That's a lot. As we said at the beginning of the show, that seems like an eternity if you're trying to just fill 4 minutes.
So Painter asked me some things like, favorite film from each of the last 10 decades was one of the questions Painter wanted from me, which gets me back to the 30s. I said a Marx Brothers movie from the 30s because I don't think
the
I've 30s, seen...
The 30s
I have not seen
would
that many.
Include Wizard of Oz.
I could have included Wizard of Oz.
And
Casablanca's...
yeah.
Or is that maybe early
Casablanca
40s?
Casablanca was the 40s.
I said Citizen Kane for my movie
Citizen
from the 40s.
Citizen Kane... Well, I thought Citizen Kane 41. Was the same.
41.
Okay.
Citizen Kane's 40. But you, right. get, no, you get some... some
but yeah, Wizard of Oz famous. Was like 39, I think.
I love Night at the Opera, though. I have seen Night at the Opera.
When was Gone with the Wind?
Oh, Gone with the Wind's probably in the
So I mean, there were a couple of movies people.
There's some
have
famous
heard of
ones,
from,
yeah,
from way back.
And then what was the one? Oh yeah, but three movies you think everyone should give a watch, Bill, for kids that haven't watched a movie ever made before like 2000. What are some movies that you would give the Bill Cameron stamp of approval? I
wouldn't. Well, kids
or
need
people?
To...
How about people in general?
Okay.
You know, well, I mean, don't recommend anything.
The Wizard of Oz is probably one that's going to be in there. I don't know.
Have we told the Buddy Ebsen
God,
story?
I have to think about that one.
You can think about Buddy Ebsen, who played Jed Clampett on the Beverly Hillbillies,
and Barnaby Jones
was originally cast as the Tin Man in the film version of the Wizard of Oz.
Jack Webb. No, Jack Webb was Dragnet.
That's not right.
Jack somebody was the Tin Man.
So the so Buddy Ebsen was cast as the Tin Man, and they gave him the makeup to make him look like the Tin Man,
and he already killed him.
He had a horrible allergic reaction to it and almost died. And instead of thinking like, let's go find some other makeup to use this guy,
we'll just get somebody else.
Yeah, that's 1940s Hollywood for you. Let's slap this makeup on someone
Buddy
else.
Buddy Ebsen
see if he
was
lives.
Very popular in the movies at the time. I mean, he was an outstanding dancer. And that's one of the reasons he was going to be the Tin Man.
Yeah, well, the Tin Man has the Tin Man and the Scarecrow both have right. like some really intensive. You know, that's one thing about those older movies, long shots, right? Because editing was expensive back then, so the dancers had to get it right, or you had to start over, and so you'd see like
that's
long.
Why the Fred Astaire, some of the takes with him are just phenomenal.
They're, I mean, you can't imagine the endurance required in some of this, and some of the. I think later on you saw some of the action stars try to use that with their martial arts, where it's long, unbroken mm-hmm. takes. Bruce Lee and things like that would have long shots where they wouldn't make a cut. But by the way, Bill, I said Network, Alien, and Godfather 2 were my were my three movies that everyone should see. I said, so I picked three 70s movies, but I went Network, Alien, Godfather 2. I said, check out those three.
I'll have to think about that. We got a caller?
Yeah, so we had a call, and he was just saying Jack Haley was...
Jack Haley!
I knew it was Jack.
Thank you, caller, for the... Are any of those, I mean, those movies are from your sort of...
They were a little before my time.
Those three? Network,
oh, no,
Network,
you were talking Wizard of Oz.
Network, Alien, and Godfather 2?
Absolutely.
Like, those are probably three movies you could do worse as far as three.
Yeah, I just have to had three movies.
I'm a big Network. You know, I almost said Jaws. I almost had Jaws on my list, which I feel like is probably one that people should... Were you about to do it?
Not... I wouldn't necessarily encourage them to do it, you know, this time of year.
You're thinking
about going to the beach, going watch the Jaws.
Yeah. Although, you know what? I would point out that
because you're getting to see some...
The mayor in that movie, still the mayor in Jaws 2, right?
Still was.
Someone on social media said, you know, that used to be something people pointed out as one of the flaws.
And how? No way.
But you know what? Like, now it's one of the things that rings true.
What was the name of the town?
Oh, in Jaws, it's...
It's been a while since I've seen it.
It's not Mayberry. I was gonna say it's Mayberry's. Mayberry's not right.
No, it's not Mayberry. It's a coastal sounding town name. I can't think of it. But
Amity Island.
Amity Island. That's it. They're gonna need a bigger boat. Yep. All right. We're just about out of time.
Filmed on the Panhandle.
Yes, it was.
Jaws 2. A lot of Jaws 2.
A lot of folks went down to be extras on the beach.
A lot of Opal and Aaron, the two hurricanes in the mid 90s, destroyed a lot of those locations, but they'd been preserved.
Close Encounters was filmed in West Mobile.
That's right. But I think there are still parts.
That's a movie I haven't thought about in a long time.
That's a good one too. That's a scarier ET.
With
Bo Spielberg. Anyway. Oh.
All right. We're out of time. People are going, thank goodness they're out of time. Shut them up.
I think they liked it.
I enjoyed it. Hey, got me through. I didn't know if I was going to make it through 2 hours. Fun show today. We're back on Monday. Brian Matthews should be joining us. Catch up on everything that goes on over the weekend. But we're out of time. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.